despite the fact that most of the money is going towards the president's pro-teen sex programs, we're seeing more and more communities choosing sexual risk avoidance.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. We are pleased to have Valerie Huber with us today to talk about two recent studies that confirmed the importance of providing consistent and common sense messages to youth about delaying sexual activity until marriage. Valerie is president of ASCEND, a national pro-abstinence education group, formerly known as the National Abstinence Education Association, or NAEA. ASCEND represents organizations and individuals who support a priority of risk avoidance through abstinence education. Valerie, welcome back to Family Policy Matters.
Well, John, it's always good to be with you. Thanks for having me again.
It's always good to have good news to discuss. Valerie, I know the last time that we had you on the program a few months ago, we talked about the decline in teen sexual activity that we've been seeing in recent years. But a new study from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, shows an even sharper or steeper decline. Tell us about the CDC's latest findings regarding teen sexual activity and what makes these findings so significant.
Well, the last time we chatted, we looked at this same data from 1991 through 2013. And at that time, there had been about a 16% drop in the percentage of teens who had ever had sex, which is really, you know, a great improvement. Just 2 years difference, now looking at 1991 through 2015, there is now a 28% change. That means from 1991, when things were just beginning to be a culture where it was normalizing teen sex, to now where everything, it seems, is promoting casual sex, younger and younger ages, we're seeing fewer and fewer teens actually having sex. An astounding but very good news.
Valerie, one of the things that you pointed out about this new CDC study is that you expect a result of it to be a public acknowledgement of the relevance and effectiveness of the sexual risk avoidance message in both the press and in policy. First of all, for those who don't really know what sexual risk avoidance means, describe that for us. And isn't this pretty much what we used to refer to as abstinence education?
Yes, it is. But sexual risk avoidance, or what we call SRA for short, is really a lot more descriptive of a term that shows how waiting for sex, hopefully until marriage, is really a health choice. And the term sexual risk avoidance is taken from public health entities like the CDC. So it's a choice to avoid all the risks associated with sex, particularly as a teen, because that's the age group that we work with. But the research is pretty compelling among all age groups, but more specifically and much more strongly among teens.
Just to follow up on that, what kind of reaction have we seen so far to the new CDC data on teen sexual activity and this great reduction? Do you think we could see a renewed emphasis on programs that teach teens how to delay sex until marriage? Or do you think we're going to continue to see kind of this battle between sexual risk avoidance and what we refer to as more comprehensive sex education that often promotes condoms, contraceptives, and other activities and devices of that nature?
In terms of what kind of reaction we've mm-hmm. seen so far. Among those who are promoting that sex normalization kind of message, have sex, just make sure you use contraception, the so-called comprehensive sex ed approach, they are befuddled and kind of beside themselves that teens are not having sex at the same rate that they were a few years ago. It kind of undercuts their message that, well, teens are going to have sex anyway, so of course they need an array of contraception available to them. It's unrealistic to think that in this day and age that waiting for sex is a realistic or relevant message to them. Well, that was their messaging for far too many years, and teens are showing that their message really, in truth, is not relevant. In terms of your second question, could we see a renewed emphasis on these sorts of programs? Well, I certainly hope so, and we're starting to see some positive signs. We'll go into a little more detail later, but Senator Blunt in the Senate, who is chair of the Labor and Health and Human Services Subcommittee of Appropriations, recently championed sexual risk avoidance education, where we saw an increase in funding by 50% in the Senate bill. The House bill, led by Chairman Tom Cole, is going to be released, we think, after the July 4th congressional recess, and we're hopeful that we'll see something approaching parity between so-called comprehensive sex ed and SRA education. And despite the fact that most of the money is going towards the president's pro-teen sex programs, we're seeing more and more communities choosing sexual risk avoidance instead. In fact, the Guttmacher Institute recently released a report where they were hoping to be able to laud all of the advancements in sex education made because of the president's big push on his explicit programs. But instead, their study showed that fewer and fewer communities are interested in teaching that kind of sex ed. Instead, they want to teach SRA education. That was also very encouraging to us.
That really is great news. Now, Valerie, some commentators have suggested, in looking at teens, the audience of the focus of much of these programs, that the social media use by teens may be driving this trend in teens not having sex. But I believe that you have disputed that notion. What do you believe the impact of social media use is in relation to teen sexual activity? Are there other factors that are driving this decline?
We really don't know exactly what the factors are contributing to this decline. It's possible that social media may play a part. But the fact of the matter is, John, that these numbers were already decreasing before social media was such a thing. You look around, and when you look at middle schoolers and high schoolers, if they have a phone, they're staring at the phone instead of human faces. So we know that they're involved in that. Whether that is the reason they're not having sex, I really think that that's a simplification. We know one thing, and that is when we partnered with Barna Research to ask older teens why they weren't having sex. These were 18 and 19-year-olds. The two top reasons that they gave, and actually these two reasons were tied for first place. One was because they were waiting to have sex for a committed relationship. Now, we don't know exactly how they defined that, but that was number one. The second was they're waiting because of their values. Social media was not in there. So this is actually very encouraging to us, and it's showing that perhaps they're waiting for the right reason.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Now, Valerie, I want to ask you about another recent study that strengthens arguments for sexual risk avoidance and positive messages about resisting engagement in those risky activities. This study looked at school condom distribution programs and the teen birth rate, as well as sexually transmitted diseases. What did this study by Notre Dame researchers find, and why are these findings so important to the debate over sex education across our nation?
It is a very interesting study. They looked at schools with and without condom distribution, and those that had condom distribution with no counseling attached to it, and those that had counseling attached to it. And they found that those that gave out condoms without any kind of counseling attached to it had an increase in teen pregnancy, and I think that it was about a 10% increase. But this study is a little tricky for a couple of reasons. First of all, the results may be more historical than a commentary today because they were looking at behavior from about a decade ago. As we know, the state of sex ed today differs from 10, 15 years ago. And so the study does tell us this. Giving teens a bowl of condoms in the school nurse's office is really selling them short. They deserve a lot more than that. And this study does show that that minimalistic attempt at quote-unquote sex education really only adds to the problem.
Well, Valerie, on that note, and for the benefit of our listeners, how can parents educators, pastors, and youth workers reinforce the good choices that teens are making about sex and help them to continue to make similar choices, as you just said, as they enter into early adulthood prior to marriage?
That is such a good question. We really have to ask ourselves whether we are parents, youth workers, teachers, any of those categories that you mentioned. What is it that we are saying? And are we saying anything to teens about this issue? Secondly, if we are talking about it, are we reinforcing that healthiest choice to wait for sex, hopefully until marriage? Or are we giving into the cultural narrative that kind of expects teens to have sex? What is the message that we're giving to that teen who's already had sex? Are we offering condemnation, or are we offering hope for healthier choices in the future? And I'm not suggesting that we would probably even knowingly do the former, but we need to be intentional in doing the latter. The truth is, what we say matters. And it's also important for us to be good role models as well, because the words that are coming out of our mouths have to match the life that we're living as well.
Valerie, before we go, and we're unfortunately just about out of time, but before we go, could you give us a brief update on what is happening in Congress with respect to federal funding for sex education? I know you mentioned a couple of bills in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House, but what do you anticipate will happen with those? I know it's tough without a crystal ball to foretell the future, especially as it pertains to Congress. But what do you see as the status of this funding right now? And what are some things that our listeners might do to help with the great efforts that you all are making?
Well, we made some very good gains in the last year of Congress. And right now we're looking at a very short season left because of the upcoming election. And Congress has a lot of work to do, and one of them is to pass a spending bill for this next year. As I mentioned earlier, the July 4th recess is kind of going to be the turning point, and we're expecting a release of the House bill for sex ed funding. We need to watch and see what it looks like, and if it's favorable, as we're hoping that it will be, your listeners could call their members of Congress, encourage support for that bill. In addition, we have the Healthy Relationships Act, both in the House and the Senate. And as this session wanes, it's really important for as many members of Congress to sign on as co-sponsors for that bill. Not because we're expecting it to be voted on yet this year, but because it sets a good precedent for the beginning of next year's session.
Before we go, Valerie, I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can get more information about Ascend. We certainly will be tracking very closely these activities and the status of this legislation in Congress, but I'm sure many of our listeners would like to develop a personal relationship with you and with Ascend. If you would, provide your website for our listeners, and also I believe that you have an event coming up in Greensboro, North Carolina shortly, and would like to give you an opportunity to mention that as well.
We are actually working to launch our new website, which is weascend.org. And right there in North Carolina, as you said, July 26th and 27th, we're going to be spending time in Greensboro, North Carolina, training those who want to either advocate for or teach sexual risk avoidance education in their school, in their church, or who want to know how to confidently promote this best message in their communities. Contact Ascend if anyone would like to attend. We're going to be taking registrations up until the day before that training, which is unprecedented. Typically, we do not do that. Contact us at info@weascend.org for more information.
And with that, Valerie Huber, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for the excellent work that you do promoting sexual risk avoidance education nationwide.
Well, thank you, John, and thank you for your good work as well.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.